And welcome back once again to another edition of the Calgary Stampeder podcast. This won't be the final Calgary Stampeder podcast of the year, despite the fact that, well, we've run out of Calgary Stampeders for the season, but we're going to keep this going through the Grey Cup. Just talk about how things go the big Grey Cup week in Calgary. I am, of course, Dave Rowe. He's Jock Wilson, and we are joined by our special guest, our good friend, Danny Austin from Post Media. Hey, Danny.
Hey, man. I will say I have not run out of emails from irate fans telling me this team needs to trade Bo Levi Mitchell and fire Dave Dickinson. So, I mean,
okay, well, there's two things that won't be happening.
Hey, but let's be honest. Bo has to own it. Bo is very, very bad. And if you would have told me that the Stampeders would shut down Andrew Harris, shut down Janarian Grant, hold Zach Caleros just 11 completions, I would have said the Stampeders win this game. But unfortunately, Bo did suck. And, and hey, I'm not saying trade him. I'm not saying trade. I'm glad Bo owned it. And I'm glad his teammates defended him, but Bo, he froze up. And his hands got numb. Dave Dickinson said that. Bottom line is, it was Bo's worst game.
And my thing is, he did own it. Like, that's the problem with people being like, well, he's got to own it. Well, no, he did own it.
He did own it.
He was bad. And my thing is, ultimately, like, he picked a bad time to have the worst game of his career. I am not defending him doing that. I just think it needs to be put in perspective. I will tell you that I talked to Nick Arbuckle, and he said that when he was coming in on those second shorts, he had to look down to make sure the ball was in his hands. So anyone telling me the Stamps should have taken out Bo Levi Mitchell and put in Nick Arbuckle,
no.
Nick Arbuckle couldn't do it either. I have no idea why the Bombers dealt with that better. Let us be very clear. I believe it was a 71-yard touchdown. Caleros, other than that, Caleros didn't do any better than Bo Levi Mitchell. And look, I'm not defending the game that he played. I'm just saying, relax. It's Bo Levi Mitchell. He took you to four of the last five Grey Cups. Stop being so entitled.
Yeah, now before we get into some more of the micro about what happened this year, I want to look at the macro. Hey, how's that for 57 words? But you know, I was just thinking about this this morning. You know, the Montreal Alouettes win 10 games, go out the first round of the playoffs, and everyone's talking about what a huge success the season was.
And what a great future they have.
And what a great future. And, you know, conversely, the Stampeders win 12 games, you know, go out in the first round of the playoffs, and it's a disaster. I guess the first question is, well, you know, Jock, I'll start with you. Success or not this season?
Well, I tell you what, I had Dave Dickinson on Sports Talk with Jock earlier this week, and when you lose your last game and you're not a champion, you know, it's tough to define anything as a success, especially in a nine-team CFL. So I do understand that. But even Dave Dickinson said, this was his toughest year coaching assignment with this team, all of the injuries. We all know the story. I thought this team was going to be a 10-win team during the regular season. I figured they were going to be a third-place team. They overachieved in my books. And, you know, ultimately, did they get derailed, you know, at the end? Yeah, they did. Did I think they were going to beat the Bombers? Yeah, I thought they had a very good chance to beat the Bombers. But I will say this about the Calgary Stampeders. This was one of the most exciting years that I had covering this team because they were in every game. It was exciting. They could have lost all these games as well. They found ways to win. And is the future bright for the Calgary Stampeders? Hey, there's going to be changes. There's always changes. But when you look at this team, this is a very, very young team. I do believe they still have the best quarterback in the Canadian Football League. I wouldn't trade Bo Levi Mitchell straight across for anybody in this league.
Nope.
So from that perspective, you know, there's your building block. Yes, he's high paid. I loved what Dave Dickinson said, you know, earlier. They've got a little bit of salary cap space. So what they can do is they can now get these players under contract. They can put the bonuses on the 2019 cap, and that will help them, I think, moving forward. I do think it's going to be an interesting offseason. So,
Danny, success or not?
Before I go into this, I do want to make sure we're going to talk a little bit about Dickinson's NFL window comments later,
yes.
I assume,
yes. Yes.
Because that's a huge caveat here. I honestly believe that this was a rebuilding season. I know that doesn't fully exist. Mm-hmm. I am a Toronto Raptors fan. I'm completely fine with the fact that they lost Kawhi Leonard and now have to. You know, they're probably not a championship team this year. They got to sort of build
But they got
things.
That championship.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. You got to push the young guys forward, and that's sort of how I felt about this season. Look, Cordero Law was out. That's a starting defensive end, the leader. They lost Alex Singleton, Jameer Thurman. We know the names. I don't have to go into it. Siante Evans.
Mm-hmm.
Their defensive line. Look, I did the calculation. There were four defensive starters in the West semifinal who started last year's Grey Cup.
Yeah.
There were, of the receivers, Reggie Bagleton did not play. Kamar Jordan did not play in the Grey Cup last year. I really wish I had my tweet up, but I don't think there were any receivers who started last year's Grey Cup who played. That's how down that receiving core was. Ideally, they would have had Markieff Ambles starting, although Josh Huff played pretty well on Sunday. And possibly could have taken over that job. But ideally, they would have had Juwan Breskes in. They would have had Eric Rogers. They would have had Marquis Thambles. That's three receiving starters. The offensive line was pretty good. But otherwise, I mean, it was Don Jackson, the three offensive linemen, and Bo. Those were the only starters. So let's not pretend that this was not a season of huge change. Yeah. And they have these young guys. Now the question is, and we heard it, I don't know that Trey Roberson wants to be back. He has another year on his contract. You texted me and we made sure earlier. Yeah. And then we talked to him, but he's got this NFL window, so it doesn't matter. So rebuilding, I mean, is there any value in rebuilding at this point? If guys can just leave, if they have a good season, if Nate Hawley can just go, you invest that development time? Or do you now have to start looking at free agency with veterans a little more seriously?
Yeah, I mean, that's the frustration for me, is because this kind of caught me off guard, because, you know, I remember a few years ago, the option year, in contracts and having that NFL window open. And then that went away. And now, you know, hearing Dave Dickinson, you know, this is back. You know, when did this come back? How did this come back?
This was last year. I believe it was August 20th was the day, August 20th, 2018. And I apologize if I'm getting the day wrong, but it was last summer. Anyone signed after that gets a window, which sounds like it's the end of January.
Okay.
The CFL should do a better job communicating this. It should do a better job communicating all of its weird little rules. But
they probably don't want to because they know it's embarrassing.
It was hidden away somewhere in the CBA.
Yeah. But I'll say this, guys. Like, even if Trey Roberson does, you know, kick some tires, and Nate Hawley kicks some tires, and you can look at it, but there's no guarantees they're going to go. Number one, you need a guy. You need a guy that really believes in you. Trey Roberson, unfortunately, he can't use that West semifinal as a resume tape because he was awful. You know, he peaked twice and got beat twice badly.
Worst DB on the field.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm not convinced Trey Roberson is going to, you know, look at what last year, you know, Alex Singleton got cut from the Eagles, finally got back on, still hasn't played defense. He's played special teams. You know, Jagera Davis in that same situation.
Let me give you an example from one of my one-on-ones. I talked to Corey Greenwood. Corey Greenwood said, look, I'm going to take until at least after Christmas. And he's like, I possibly have all of January, because he says he doesn't know if the Stampeders, if he does decide to come back, he does not know if the Stampeders even want to go with a Canadian, mm-hmm. a middle linebacker. And he said, I don't even think that they know, because they might want to go with Nate Hawley. He had a great first season, but they're not going to know if he's available until after that window. So it's not just planning long term. It's, Corey Greenwood tells you January 1st, hey, you know what, I'm ready to go. And then you have to say, well, we're going to wait to hear what Nate Hawley hears from the NFL. That affects your relationship with the players. That affects what you are able to do in free agency. I think it's a really big issue. And I hear the argument that, look, these players don't have guaranteed contracts. Guarantee the contracts, take out the window. Mm-hmm. No, that's not how it works. This is football. We're never going to have guaranteed contracts. That's not even a goal that I think the players' union is working towards.
And even from a marketing standpoint, it's frustrating when you don't know from one year to the next sort of what the core of your team is going to be. And you know, with some of the who's out of the way, you know, one thing I think that has to be taken care of, because it was just so glaring in that Winnipeg game when you had Chris Streveler, Nick Dembski, and Andrew Harris basically running down your throat for the entire second half, and there was absolutely no ground answer from the Calgary Stampeders. I mean, I'm not sure what the problem is, because I look at that offensive line, and that offensive line is pretty good to me.
I don't fully buy that there was no ground answer. I thought Don Jackson was pretty darn good.
Don Jackson had a pretty good, you know, a couple of pretty good runs, but again, in the second half, you know, where was that?
They were down in the second half, though. They weren't trying to throw it, or they weren't trying to run.
You have all the time you need in the Canadian Football League, especially, you know, when you look at how close that game was in the third quarter. But, you know, again, you know, we're left with Bo Levi Mitchell underthrowing the receivers
Jackson, personally, I believe, was a little bit mismanaged this year. I honestly think that just dropping him out of the lineup for Kadeem Carey, Kadeem Carey has a long injury history dating back to his NFL days. I don't think it was any surprise. I think that affected the relationship. Look, they had four starting running backs this year.
Mm-hmm.
I also think the O-line, I'm going to give a lot of credit to. I did in the paper today. They did a terrific job keeping Bo Levi Mitchell standing up. They did not do a very good job opening up holes. But it's obviously an area. I think Don Jackson should have been an asset who was treated a little bit more carefully this season.
Well, hey, my bottom line is this is one area of improvement that they've got to go out and look. And whether you're, you know, looking at college football players, you know, I don't know who's on your neg list as far as running backs, but, you know, you better bring in, you know, probably a five or six different running backs. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, Schulteis is going to get this dome, because they're not going to have these spring camps, you know, in the States. They're going to bring these players right into Calgary, you know, in the spring, and we're going to see what happens. Hey, Don Jackson, good luck in free agency. I don't think, you know, his resume is that good right now to go out and, you know, really get a position. So I do think there are running backs. You know, it'd be nice to have a John Cornish. It'd be nice to have a Joffrey Reynolds. It'd be nice to have a Kelvin Anderson. But right now, I think you got to go find that place. And I'm not sure the Stampeders
have that. May not get a starting job. He will get a job in the CFL.
Fair enough.
And ultimately, I fully understand feelings get hurt. And I think Don was a little bit hurt with the way he was dealt with this year.
Yep, fair enough.
Looking at the defensive side of things, that is also going to be a need area. I mean, you know, we've talked about Trey Roberson, what may or may not happen with him. Mm-hmm. Corey Greenwood may or may not happen with that position. But also the fact is Brandon Smith, we know, is gone. Brandon Smith has announced his retirement. And Cordero Law, as outstanding as he was this year, isn't getting any younger. Now, you look at the guys that were hurt this year, you know, there's going to be some help coming back from the injured list when these guys have the offseason to recover. You know, there's some personnel there. But, you know, defensively, what does this team need to look at?
Dave said he expects one or two other players other than Brandon Smith to retire, sort of through process of elimination. I talked to Shane Bergman. It's not him. It's not Derek Dennis. Cordero Law would seem like the most likely candidate. I actually think Chris Kasher had a pretty good first season. I think he came on in the second half. As you said, like, let's just see what we get from those Essimer Aubrey's, those guys.
Flo Rimolade.
Yeah, I assume that they have Flo for a second season or for another season. I don't actually know. This is one of those areas, like, linebacker, if you have Nate Holly and Winton McManus back, no matter what, you're sort of set there. It's two Americans. You can find backups and develop them. It's Raheem Wilson replacing Brandon Smith at that halfback position. Mm-hmm. There's no question.
And that's a good replacement. He's a good player.
So, and you can find a field corner.
Yeah. I mean, you've got Lorenzo Jerome, you know, Rob Daniel, if he gets healthy again.
I'm not that worried about the defense. I ultimately, you would love to go get an Alex Singleton, or something like that, but Singleton's probably looking now, like he's got a couple years in the NFL, and then you're going to get him back. So I don't think you're investing long-term in a linebacker necessarily. I think you like what you have.
You brought up Corey Greenwood, and I'm curious, because of his history with his injuries, you know.
And not getting any younger.
Is that a player you want to build, you know, your linebacking core around? Now, I know he's a ratio changer, but, you know, odds are he's going to get injured again next year.
Corey referred to himself as a rental player.
Yeah.
This year.
Exactly. So I don't know if you want to build your defense around Corey Green. That middle linebacker position is very important.
No, but I do think, do you guys not think Winton McManus showed enough?
That's what I'm saying. I'm not even sure I'd want Corey Greenwood back. I would go with Winton because you're going to get Junior Turner back, and he's important. He's very, very important from a ratio.
Are you getting Junior Turner back?
Junior Turner is another guy who's not getting any younger,
he's another injury-prone guy too.
And the list of injuries is just getting longer.
I hope Junior Turner's back. That's a very serious injury for a guy in his 30s.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, hey, Derek Wiegand was an injury-prone player, and he finally played an 18-game full season. So, you know, you hope that's going to happen.
And I mean, who knows about these? Like the number of defensive linemen. It's weird. Like we focus on the injuries that happen late in the season. Ivan McLennan, though. You talked about Junior Turner. They actually have a lot of depth there.
Yeah, they do.
And it's possible that a Junior Turner, you don't need him to play 18 games. Mm-hmm. You're sort of coming in and saying, we're going to manage you a little bit. When we need you, you're going to play. And then be ready for the last 6-7 games of the season going into next year. But I also think that's probably an area. I believe that the offensive line, you probably don't need to use a first or second round pick on an offensive lineman this year. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go after a D-line.
No, you say Ryan Sevier, I mean, he developed into a full-time starter. I think, you know, Justin Lawrence in a limited sample size could be that number six guy.
But you should have Erdos back.
Yep.
You should. That is a big, I have no idea.
David Bond is going to be a year older. He had, you know, a little bit of a taste this year.
If you can keep UCAM, and I imagine that you're moving him out to that left tackle, although Kazatadi had a good second half.
Yeah.
You know, so I think they have options, so I don't think you need to use what should be, a 5 or 6th overall pick? It's not going to be the last pick of the first round this year. You can use that on a defensive lineman.
I do believe if you're going to move away from Corey Greenwood and use Winton McManus, which I think we all sort of agree on at this point, you know, you're going to have to change your ratio somewhere. So you want to go with 3 nationals on the offensive line.
You have to go with 3 nationals on the offensive line.
Here's something I want to float to you guys. Is it time to look at bringing in a kicker or two, at least for a look?
for a little bit of competition. Why not? I'd bring in competition. Doesn't mean that Renee is going to be gone. Doesn't mean that Rod Maver is going to be gone. But hey, they're both getting older as well. I love fat competition, and I would be stunned if they don't bring in, you know, a couple of kickers just for competition.
Yeah, it's tough. They're both sort of what in that 3 to 4 best in the league at their position.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Neither of them, I don't think you can make an argument that, you know, they're on the Medlock level. Or
Medlock was a stud in that semifinal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I'm saying based on what my eyes saw this year, and it's like every time the Stamps played the Bombers, Medlock just was terrific. Yeah. But
although Rob Maver punted very well in the semifinal.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think either of them are an issue. So that's my thing, is I don't know that it's the area to, like, Paredes, Renee had a couple bad games near the end of the season, but also bounced back and was fine.
Right. Yeah, and you know, when there was still, even though like his percentage overall wasn't what we're used to seeing, when it was money kick time, he was
a great guy. He's the most annoying guy as a newspaper reporter because he doesn't want to talk to
when
he's hitting all them because he doesn't want to jinx it. And then the second that he misses them, you go to talk to him, and it's like, well, we only talk when you're missing them.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know how to, and it's like, that's not an indictment on him. He literally does not want to jinx his good
streak. It's so true. Yeah. So true.
But yeah, I mean, it's like, it's funny looking at where they need Canadians, because I think if Juan Breskison and Herdimer Ayala, they may have the best Canadian tandem of receivers in the league next year. So it's funny. It's like I was just thinking about it last night as I kind of went to bed, and I was like, God, having a guy like John Cornish is like, what a
game changer.
What a game changer that was.
Well, you know, and you're right, because you really look at breakdown the injuries this year. You know, losing Erdos early, that was a killer. You know, losing Breskison, you know, midway through the season, that was a killer. You know, losing, Corey Greenwood late in the season, that was a killer, because they're all, you know, main starters. You know, Junior Turner early, too, was a star. So, you know, it's one thing to lose an international player. It's another thing to lose a starting Canadian.
And I mean, I went back and tried to figure it out, but as you guys know, it's a little hard to find CFL stats, and it's even harder to find specifically whether they're Canadian or not. So you guys have been around this team for a lot longer than I did. Not just Herdimer Ayala, but Colton Hunchak had more receiving yards than Anthony Parker, than Breskison, than Lamar Durant. I don't think you'd have to go back 30, 40 years to find a Canadian rookie, and maybe not ever, who had the sort of numbers that Mayala and even Hunchak
had. A guy who
had,
didn't even start the year as a member of the team.
It's really incredible. And I don't know that Colton Hunchak necessarily develops into an 1,000-yard receiver, but it's another one of those depth pieces that does matter. Well, and I mean, I honestly think the only reason we don't have an answer to whether anyone, any Canadian ever, has more receiving yards than Mayala for the Stampeders is because I don't think they know.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I'd love to be a fly on the wall, you know, Thursday when John Huffnagel gets together with Dave Dickinson and they start planning, you know, who they want to bring back, where they want to go, you know, from that perspective. Because, you know, they knew last year they were going to lose their starting safety. They knew last year they were going to lose Lamar Durant. But they had a plan. That's why they went out and they got, you know, Herdimer Ayala in that first round draft pick. Because they had that vision, and they always have a game plan in place. And so that's going to be very interesting.
Well, and it's so interesting when you're around the team. I mean, all anyone talked about for the first half of the season was how good Leon Johnson was going to be, the offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Never made it off the practice roster. Mm-hmm. To me, that said, well, they're not sure if Derek Dennis is back next year.
Right.
We know that Derek Dennis wants to be back next year. I don't think we actually have an answer to whether he's back. I think they'd be crazy not to.
Yeah.
And they love the guy.
And, you know, I mean, part of that is, unfortunately, is going to be financial. You know, there's only, again, so many dollars to throw around. I say I'm a big Derek Dennis fan. You know, the man is one of the outstanding linemen in the CFL. But, again, that's why the Calgary Stampeders are where they are, because they plan for these contingencies. Just before we wrap it up, I want to ask you about the coaching staff. I mean, this time last year, you know, we knew Devon Claybrooks was going to be moving on. I don't know that there's that that opportunity for these guys this year. I mean, again, as many positives as there were out there, I don't think there's a guy on the staff that you project as the next head coach in the league at this point. And you know, these guys, again, did a great job in their positions. Brett Monson, first year as the defensive coach. Mark Killam had a tough year on special teams, but I still think that was more personnel than scheme.
I honestly, there was a report earlier in the year, I have no backup. I expect Ryan Dinwiddie to be offensive coordinator in Ottawa, and I expect Nick Arbuckle to be his quarterback. I have no idea if that's true. Mm-hmm. Honestly, like, that's not reporting. That's speculation. But that report was out there, and that makes
sense.
A lot of sense to me to bring Arbuckle in with his quarterback coach, who knows who he's doing. And I mean, Dinwiddie has clearly done his time. He's been rumored for this type of job for a long, long time. He's even rumored for OC or for head coaching jobs. So I think I wouldn't be surprised to see Dinwiddie if the opportunity is there. Although he needs to know who his head coach is in Ottawa. Yep. That's very important that that's not there. The Argos might make a run at that tandem, but I wouldn't be surprised if that tandem ended up in the same place together. Again, not based on reporting. And look, I don't know. I mean, are you guys confident that the Stamps don't want to make any changes? I mean, you've talked about the running game. I don't think that coaching was the problem there. I think it was a lot of different things, but that would be the only area where I think that there
and everybody, you know, at least it calls into our show, they always say, oh, Dave's got to give up the offensive play calling. It's too much on his plate. I still believe Dave is a very, very good offensive play caller, and he may be one of the best in the league, and we've already talked about, you know, the challenges for the team this year. So I don't see Dave giving up the offensive play calling anytime soon. Now, he did make Mark Killam his assistant head coach to give a bit of that responsibility, you know, to share some of that responsibility last year. So I don't see that happening.
My only thing, I have not responded to any emails since Sunday from fans. I will be doing that this afternoon. It is part of my plan. Why are they so bad at short little passes? I don't know how else to say
that. How many screens do they actually, get yardage?
Please take that receiver, that wide receiver screen out of the playbook. It doesn't work.
Over 5 yards. Yeah. I think Bo has, outside of Sunday, a very good completion level. But it's something I noticed in the back half of the season. They just can't. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Little passes to the running back, anything under
and it's almost like they were trying to compensate for a poor running game, trying to establish those short passes, and it didn't work.
And I do want to be clear. I wasn't suggesting you fire the running backs coach at all. I'm just saying it's the only other area where there might be uncertainty, but I don't think it's a...
No, I think it's fair. And obviously Dave is going to, you know, sit down with Huff, and they're going to discuss all of those options. And there might be somebody that we don't know that, you know, gets an opportunity. You know, so, you know, I hope if they do get an opportunity, good on them. You know, like, I love Josh Bell. I think he's a great character. Would he be a good DC moving forward somewhere? Maybe.
I think you give Josh Bell a couple more years.
Yeah, exactly. He needs some seasoning.
Yeah.
But on that note, we're just about out of time here. And, okay. Before we go,
we got to get our Grey Cup predictions. Who is going to be here in Calgary for Grey Cup 107?
Love that you're making me do this. Hamilton.
I think that's a no-brainer. We all agree on Hamilton.
Okay. Yep.
I mean, look, the Bombers showed me is that once they get going, if they can get going against the Riders and put some points up on the board and start throwing that tandem of quarterbacks, you have to prepare for two offenses. It's tough. So I'm sort of leaning Bombers right now. I'm going. Hitching a ride with a guy I barely know and just going out there to I figured it would be a fun time to drink there on Saturday night. So I'm sort of leaning Bombers.
Bombers, Hamilton. I think we can all agree Hamilton is I'll be stunned if Hamilton is not here. If Edmonton comes here, it'd be great for the city. It'd be great for Grey Cup 107 because, you know, you'd have all those
and it'd be good because they're in the visitors' locker room and they can't repay
that's exactly
the,
right. But
the Stampeders' locker room. Riders in the home locker room and Edmonton in the away.
Could you imagine? but I agree with you. Winnipeg right now, I think, scares the crap out of Saskatchewan. I really do. Like it's funny because I thought the way it matched up, Winnipeg scared me with Calgary because I was a little concerned about that game. But if Stamps won, I was more convinced the Stamps are going to beat the Riders than they would be in their own Grey Cup. So I'm going to say at this point, I'll say the Bombers are going to be here for Grey Cup 107.
Yeah, I'd feel a little bit better about my prediction if I was Cody Fajardo's chiropractor. But I think I'm also going to lean Bombers in this one. Danny Austin from Post Media, thanks a lot for all your help this year.
Yes,
it's been a pleasure. Certainly in the offseason, we're going to have plenty to talk about. And Jock Wilson.
Always a pleasure, Mr. Rowe.
Yeah, and that's all the time we have. Again, we're going to be back. We're going to take you through the end of the Grey Cup every Thursday on the Calgary Stampeders podcast. In the off season, just check back occasionally around about free agency. We'll keep you posted if there's any big Stampeders news out there. In the meantime, as always, we'd love to hear some story ideas from you. You got feedback. You want to tell a friend about the podcast. Hey, the more the merrier out there. For Danny Austin and for Jock Wilson, I'm Dave Rowe, and this has been another Calgary Stampeder Podcast.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.